Well, good morning, everybody. I'm calling to order this joint meeting of the Children, Families, and Economic Development Finance and Policy Committees. So glad to be doing this. Chair Hassan and I have talked about this for a while, and so glad to be bringing it, pulling it together. I believe we have a quorum of both committees, though we will not be taking official business, taking official action during this joint hearing. But so delighted to be with everybody, and welcome to you all. The topic under consideration today is childcare and early learning, and that's a topic that crosses over multiple areas of policy, and in particular for these two committees, because we know how important this is for kids in terms of brain development and for lifelong health and success and all those good things. It's important for families, for them to be able to support themselves and do what they need to do to have the resources to for food and shelter and all those good things. And then we also know, of course, that it's so important for economic development as well, for communities in the short run, and back to the point about kids, for our communities and our state in the long run as well. So delighted to be together to consider both an exciting proposal from Representative Katisa Witun and also to hear from the administration, in particular from DEED, about the office that our friends in economic development advanced and Chair Hassan advanced last session, and to get a report on that as well. That report, in a way, kind of was coming to both these committees, and so we thought this would be a great chance to do that. With that, I'll see if Chair Hassan has any comments that she wants to make and see if there's questions from members and then begin. But Madam Chair, anything that you'd like to say at this point?
Good morning, everyone. It is exciting, isn't it? I see the room is full. This is really a topic that's near and dear to my heart. As many of you know, I have a four-year-old who is a grown-up child who I remember the first time I took her to daycare, I looked at the woman when she gave me the billing. It was like $2,200. That's more than my mortgage. So when I say I understand the cost of childcare crisis and the issue that exists that prevents many parents from joining the workforce, it's really understatement. We had a joint hearing, the economic development and the workforce team had a joint hearing in Mankato, in North Mankato, in January, late January, and I remember childcare was one of the biggest issues that people were talking about, that they can't join the workforce because if I have to pay $2,000 for a childcare, I might as well just take care of my own child. So I'm excited to be here today. I'm excited to have this conversation and to figure out a solution for our parents, because we are in a crisis, not only in childcare crisis, but also workforce crisis. Many of our businesses are struggling to find talent. So it's exciting to be here, and I'm looking forward to hear this great bill that Representative Katisa Witun has been working on with many of our friends and advocates. So let's get started.
So let's do it. Just to put the bill in a little bit of context as well, last session, in addition to the establishment of the Office of DEED through the Economic Development Committee, we did a lot as a body to advance support for this, what is a public good and really needs public support, for low income, for the lowest income families, for folks who are in this workforce of providing care and education to young kids, to try to boost those really extremely low wages a bit. We did a number of things, but one piece that was missing was support for families above the very lowest income. And so this is an exciting proposal to reduce costs for families and provide some additional affordability. So, and just see if there's any questions about the agenda, first of all, from members at all, before we dive in. And not seeing any. And so we will start then with House File 3681, which is in the possession of Children and Families Committee. Today is an informational hearing before both bodies. And so Representative Katisa Witun, we'll invite you to please present your bill, and we'll go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, everyone. I have the privilege to serve on both the Children and Families Policy and Finance Committee as well as the Economic Development Committee, and I'm just thrilled that all of my co-committee members who are able to join us today are going to be able to consider the proposal that we have spent a lot of time putting together. And, you know, this issue, it's a tremendous challenge not only for Minnesota families, but it does have a direct impact on our economy. And, in fact, a study that was actually published last February, so now the numbers might be a little bit out of date, but it estimates that the U.S. economy loses about $122 billion when parents leave the workforce or even reduce their hours to care for young children. Currently, Minnesota is ranked fourth out of 50 states for the most expensive infant care. In contrast with the average annual cost of college tuition, which is $11,226, or like Chair Hassan mentioned already, housing, about $11,137, infant care in Minnesota costs on average just over $16,000 a year. So last year, Chair Pinto already alluded to some of the work that we've done. The legislature addressed the needs of the lowest income families through investments in child care assistance, early learning scholarships, Head Start, and school-based pre-K. Our nation-leading child tax credit is going to cut childhood poverty in Minnesota by over one-third. I'm proud of the work that we did for our most vulnerable children, and that work continues. However, we know that there is a huge gap in support for almost 75% of Minnesota families who make too much money to qualify for these existing programs, but not nearly enough to afford both child care and other necessities. You may be familiar with the federal standard for child care affordability. We spend a lot of time in the Children and Families Committee talking about that for folks in economic development that might be new for you, but this is a national standard that came down from the Trump administration and also the Biden administration. And last week at our bipartisan kickoff at the University of Minnesota, one of our speakers, the former CEO of Ecolab, he said, I don't think that the Trump and Biden administrations have agreed on much, but this statistic is one of those things. So we're using great information here, bipartisan information, and I think we can go forward feeling good about that. In Minnesota, the median family with an infant is spending 21% of their annual income. And if that family also has a preschooler, that reaches 37% of their annualized family income. These huge child care bills arrive at a time of life when young families are just getting established, and often parents are at the start of their earning capacity early in their careers. Since I've started talking more publicly about this issue, I've heard so many stories. Do take a look in your packets. There's a lot of information, but we've got a lot of great testifiers to come here and share their stories today as well. But I've heard from people who have made their family planning decisions based on childcare, about people who have dropped out of the workforce and walked away from careers that they love because it just doesn't make sense to work when childcare is so expensive, about families being forced to take whatever care they can get instead of the quality care that they want, and even about one family that lost their home and moved out of state in part because they just missed qualifying for an early learning scholarship. Families in all of our communities across the state are experiencing these difficulties, and we can and must address the child care affordability issue to help every child in Minnesota get off to a great start. House File 3681 builds on the existing and successful Early Learning Scholarship Program and the Great Start Task Force recommendations, which are our blueprint for creating a system that works for parents, kids, and our child care workforce. The proposal would help families earning up to 150% of the state median income, which is about $174,000 a year for a family of four. It makes use of our existing providers, including licensed centers, home providers, Head Start programs, public school programs, and also tribally licensed child care. Provider stability is a hallmark of this bill. And in order to support best our child care businesses, we have included a number of best practices, including a couple from North Dakota, which include paying prospectively and making sure that our providers have the money that they need for running their programs ahead of time instead of retroactively having to request and wait on some of these payments. With that, I would, Mr. Chair, like to hand it off to Ms. Mock for a more detailed walkthrough of the bill, and I'm looking forward to a great discussion today.
Thank you so much, Representative Katizwa Toons. Returning thanks to our House researcher, Annie Mock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. I'm Annie Mock with House Research. And I'm going to walk through House File 3681, which does two primary things. One is to establish the Great Start Affordability Scholarship Program, and the other is to establish a data sharing arrangement between the Department of Revenue and the Department of Education. So starting with Section 1, this section, so bear with me a minute, I'm going to use the words Great Start a lot. So last session, the legislature established a Great Start Scholarship Program that directs the agencies to figure out ways to streamline all the early care and learning programs that the state has for families. And this section would provide that the Great Start Affordability Program that's being established under this bill would be included in that streamlining of programs for children and families in the state. So then Section 2 establishes the Great Start Affordability Scholarships. So the first subdivision has that establishment and provides that the purpose is to increase the affordability of high-quality early care and learning for families with children from birth to 5 years old. Subdivision 2 establishes the family and child eligibility for the scholarships. So a family is eligible for the program if the family has income less than 150% of state median income and has at least one child who is under the age of 5 years old and is not concurrently receiving child care assistance or an early learning scholarship. Subdivision 3 establishes program eligibility, so child care and early education programs, and their eligibility for the program, and they can participate or accept a child with a scholarship as long as they are participating in the state's quality rating and improvement system, or Parent Aware. Subdivision 4 has administrative direction for MDE. So it directs the department to establish application timelines and procedures. It provides that the scholarships are awarded for a 12-month period and requires a family to renew a scholarship prior to the end of an award period. And then it also directs the department to establish a process that a family can use to request a modification in scholarship amount prior to the end of the award period if the family needs a modification due to varying circumstances. And then this subdivision also specifies circumstances when the department has to cancel a scholarship. Subdivision 5 directs MDE on the scholarship amounts, and it provides that the department has to establish a monthly scholarship amount based on family income with a minimum per child amount of $25 per month. And then Subdivision 6 directs MDE to establish a system for making scholarship payments to programs, and that system has to have a number of characteristics in place that include having a written agreement between a program and a family that identifies the scholarship as a state-provided benefit. The system must pay prospectively. The system must make payments based on a child's enrollment rather than a child's attendance. And there has to be a process in place for transferring scholarships between early care and learning programs when a scholarship recipient moves programs. This subdivision also requires that the payments under this program start no later than September 1st of 2024. Subdivision 7 has two family notifications. One is that the department notify families in the state about potential eligibility for the program. And the second is that the early care and learning programs that accept scholarships have to identify as state-provided assistance the portion of the scholarship, the portion of a recipient's tuition that is paid for by the scholarship on each billing statement. Subdivision 8 creates a Great Start Affordability Scholarship account. This is an account in the Special Revenue Fund, and it allows the department to use up to 7% of annual appropriations for costs associated with administering and monitoring the scholarships. And that includes making payments to early care and learning programs for their administrative costs associated with accepting the scholarships. So moving on to Section 3, this adds a new subdivision to statute that allows the Commissioner of Revenue to disclose to the Commissioner of Education the minimum tax return information necessary to verify an individual's income for purposes of determining the individual's eligibility for early care and learning programs administered by MDE. Sections 4 and 5, both of these sections transfer, Section 4 transfers the scholarship program, Section 5 transfers that data sharing responsibility to the new Department of Children, Youth, and Families once it's operational. So these would both be under this bill. Both of these would, the administrative authority would move. And then Section 6 is the appropriation to MDE for the affordability scholarships. It is a blank appropriation that starts in fiscal year 2024 and is ongoing. And this appropriation also would transfer to the new department once it is operational. That is the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Mock. So members, since we just went through the bill, if there are clarifying questions just about the mechanics of what Ms. Mock read or what's in the bill, I think that's okay to do that, but I know there'll be a broader discussion about the bill a little later, but just in case anybody has anything. Okay. I'm not sure what the mic issue is. And Ms. Mock had said that reading the bill sort of forces you to use the phrase great start a lot, which folks who know me will know that I'm really happy about. So use it as many times as anybody wants. That's great. Representative Katisa Witun, are we ready for to move to testifiers?
Mr. Chair, I think that would be a great next step. I did want to really quickly acknowledge the folks who are here for the Minnesota Child Care Association Day on the Hill. So hopefully many of you will be meeting with providers from your districts later on today. But their Day on the Hill events kick off over at the Capitol Building in just under 15 minutes. So I know some of them will have to take off before we are done today. But I appreciate you being here. I appreciate all the folks who are here to listen into the testimony.
Thank you, Representative Katisa. Yes, many thanks to those who do this incredible work of getting our kids off to a great start. Appreciate it. So our first testifier, maybe we'll have the first couple come up if we can. Karina Vieda and Cheryl Thomas. And once Karina Vieda, once you settle in, if you can identify yourself. I'm going to have to say we are tight on time of quite a few testifiers, so I'm going to be pretty strict about 2 minutes per testifier. So I will sort of at the two-minute mark have to unfortunately cut you off. I'm going to apologize in advance for that just to make sure that we keep on moving. So please identify yourself and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Pinto, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karina Vleda. I'm a mother, a student, an advocate, a future lawyer, and I'm delighted to share my story with y'all. A number of women motivated me to be here today. I'm here for the mothers across Minnesota who deserve better. I'm here for my mom, who taught me the value of hard work and who has provided me with affordable child care for the last 3 years. I'm here for my daughter, Luna, who deserves a better future and more time with a mom who is less stressed. Minnesota is failing families. We're trapped in a broken cycle. We need education to secure a better future for ourselves and our children, but we need child care in order to go to school and to go to work. And we need to work full time to just afford this expensive child care. And the cycle continues. We expect mothers to do the impossible, to attend school full time, work full time, raise a family full time, as if we're not bound with the same 24 hours a day everyone else is. My mother taught me that through hard work, sacrifice, you can achieve your goals. She was a Salvadorian immigrant who didn't speak English yet managed to open a thriving grocery store. She worked around the clock to provide me and my siblings with a better life. Today, she continues to support me by taking care of my daughter. It is the only way I'm able to make ends meet. Even with the support here, there are moments where I just live paycheck to paycheck. The pace I have kept since the birth of my daughter is, in a word, unsustainable. I wake up at 6 a.m., feed my daughter, pump breast milk, get her ready for the day, pack my lunch, dinner. From 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., I work as a stockbroker's assistant, where I get only 15 minutes of break just for pumping and eating and a quick call to check on Luna. I'm home by 7:30. I feed my daughter. I spend half an hour with her, and then she goes to bed. And then at 8 p.m., it's time to do some schoolwork. I usually study until 1 a.m., and then I cross my fingers that Luna sleeps throughout the night so I can get my work done. And then the next day, I wake up at 6 a.m., and I do it all over again. At one point, the stress of this relentless pace, wounded me up at the ER, and the doctor told me I need to stress less. I need to take a vacation. And that's like telling me to fly to the moon. There are resources out there, institutions that have stepped in to close this gap where policy has fallen short. However, the resources that exist are insufficient. For example, at the University of Minnesota.
Yeah, sorry, we'll have to cut you off momentarily.
There is a child care assistant program to support parenting students. However, there's not enough funds to meet the demand. I've applied for multiple university, state, federal child care assistant programs, only to wait 7 months to be told I'm denied. Or there's no longer any funds. Research clearly illustrates that the benefits of strong early learning is important.
I'm going to have you wrap up. I'm so sorry.
No, you're good.
Quite a bit over, yeah. But
and thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony.
Changing.
Yeah, thank you so much, and thanks for your work. And best of luck in your legal studies, especially, and everything else. Thank you. So Cheryl Thomas is up next. And once, as you settle in, Dalton Outlaw, if you can make your way up as well, just be waiting. That'll sort of save us a little bit of time. And once you get settled in, please identify yourself, and please proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Cheryl Thomas, and I operate Seas Daycare. I am the second largest child care in the Red Lake Nation. I do have assistants who I do employ. I am also a mother, a foster parent, a grandmother, and I have also run for tribal council. I'm very respected in my community as an advocate who is also the person, the go-to person when somebody needs answers or help or a helping hand. I'm a voice for the children and the families of my community. I care very much about my community, our families, and the services I provide. I earned a 4-star rating in the Parent Aware, and I've worked with First Children's Finance to support renovations and improvements in my program. I work to ensure our children learn and are supported by Ojibwe language and culture. I also work tirelessly to manage the State Child Care Assistance Program, the Federal Child Care Development Fund resources for tribal families, and early learning scholarships. Because of those resources and the trust of the families I serve, I am proud to say we never closed during COVID. During COVID, my kids had perfect attendance. I almost cried as I was so proud of them and us. So many people say this work is just daycare. I think kids just come, kids just come and play and nap and are kept safe, and that's all I do. So many people say I work this daycare. Oh, they don't see the weekends and nights where I spend most of my time working on licensing, on funding for families, or trainings on weekends and preparing lessons. They also don't see me traveling, you know, miles to find the best prices for products because of the inflation. I get supplies for food and for the week so that we can operate and we don't have to leave childcare. Last weekend, I was at a birthday party, and this is just an example of me working on weekends.
And I will have to have you wrap up moment in just the next couple seconds here. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
I don't need recognition. I do it because I love these children. But love is not enough to get the people everything they need.
Thank you so much.
I'm done.
Yeah. Okay. I am so sorry. Yeah, having eight people in the time we have is maybe a little crazy. So I'm so sorry. Thank you so much for your testimony and your work. And as you settle in, as Dalton Outlaw does, Ifra and Nura, if you can please make your way up as well. And so sorry for the timing constraints here. But please, if you can identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dalton Outlaw. I am a social entrepreneur and developer, founder and CEO of Element Gym, and founder and president of Outlaw Development, an affordable housing developer here in St. Paul. Together with my wife, Lacey, we are raising five boys, ages between 1 and 9 years old, Dalton Jr., Liam, Isaac Mason, and Roman, whose first birthday is today.
Hey, happy birthday.
I'm joining you today to express my support of House File 3681. My support to the bill is tied back to my role as a father, employer, and housing developer. As someone raising a big family, I know how expensive childcare and preschool are and how this shapes the family's decisions on a day-to-day. I also know how important quality childcare is to fast-developing brains of young children. As an employer and entrepreneur, I know that the lack of quality of affordable childcare is a drag on the economy, keeping people out of the workforce or causing people not to work more hours or to decline raises in order to qualify for existing subsidy programs. As a provider of affordable housing, I know that high cost of childcare can dramatically impact families' budgets, interfering with their ability to afford stable housing and causing them to have to choose between paying their rent and utilities and their childcare bills. Thank you for listening and to my considering words and my support to 3681.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the testimony. And again, happy birthday to your son.
Thank you.
1 year, yeah. So Ifra Nur, as you settle in, Elena Skoglund actually is on video, I think, so we're going to see what we can do. Maybe Jill Westendorp, you can make your way up as well and be ready to testify.
All right, Mr. Chair, I'm going to try to...
Oh, yeah, maybe see what you can do on set up the video. And Ifra Nur, pleasure to have you, and please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Ifra Nur, and I am a director at South Metro Childcare Academy in Bloomington. I am also a leader at Kids Count on Us. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today. At South Metro Child Care Academy, we're open 7 days a week, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. on weekdays, and we're also open 12 to 9 on the weekend. We have 3 shifts during those 7 days. And even though, you know, we're searching for families in need, we are not full, which makes it difficult for us to make ends meet. We only have $7 enrolled, and I have a preschool room and a school-age room that are closed. Only one of our three shifts is fully enrolled. Every day I hear stories from families that make it clear we're not fully enrolled because childcare and early learning is not affordable for families. Too many families do not qualify for childcare assistance, but do not make enough money to pay for childcare. For many, this means one parent must often stay home and not work, which is always the mother. I personally had to leave my job at the school because I couldn't afford childcare. Now I work at the childcare where my kids come and I get it for discounted price. And I'm fortunate to have that opportunity. I help families also apply for childcare benefits every day, and I see mothers that get denied because they're over the limit. I had one mom that was very upset because she was $3 over the limit to get childcare assistance. As a childcare provider, I am offering a services that almost no one can pay for, but I cannot afford to charge any less and stay open. Yet our communities cannot function without a childcare. Parents cannot go to work without a childcare, and childcare centers cannot stay open without the children. The bill HF3681 supports families by lowering their childcare costs, but also supports childcare centers and the entire childcare system by ensuring that we have the resources we need to remain open and continue to educate young children. I urge you to support it, and thank you for listening.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your important work for our kids and for being here. Representative Katiza, as Joe Westendorp, as you settle in, oh, look at that. We do have, actually, it's working. At least we have the video. We'll hope the audio works, too. So this next testifier is going to be by video, Elena Skoglund, who I think will probably identify herself. And so Representative Katiza Witun, we'll see if we can make it work. Oh. Okay, we've got video, not audio yet. Maybe somebody can. Okay, we're gonna see what we can do. As you're working on. Yeah.
No, wait, I have a young son and a child teacher and a leader with Kids Count On Us.
Why don't you restart, Representative Katiza, if you're able to? This is a recording, I should just note for folks, as opposed to being live. It's a recording. Yeah.
Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of both committees. My name is Elena Skoglund. I am the parent of a young son and a child care teacher and a leader with Kids Count On Us. I appreciate the opportunity to share my story with you today. I am a full-time teacher at the Early Education Center at Minnesota State Moorhead, where I teach 3- and 4-year-olds. My son Harvey is in the toddler room just down the hall from me. My husband works full-time as a police officer in the city of Holly. My husband and I always wanted to have children close in age, but Harvey is now 2.5 years old and we're not even considering a second child at the moment. I'm not exaggerating when I say that the cost of childcare is the number one factor. At the upper end of the pay scale for childcare teachers, I still only make $19.27 an hour. Even with state funding, teacher wages are still largely dependent on what families can afford to pay. And families are paying much more than they can afford. Our childcare costs for just one child eat up 50% of my annual income. If we were to have a second child, my entire salary would go to pay for childcare. We're not an outlier, however, we are the norm. Well, I'm grateful that assistance exists to help families with the lowest incomes. What about the rest of us who make too much to qualify but not enough to live comfortably? Doing everything right, getting a college degree, being in a stable marriage, doing a job that helps my community is no longer enough to scrape by. Mm-hmm. We are 2 full-time working parents working in careers that are vital to the thriving community. And we can barely afford to support one child. We need teachers and we need police officers. And for us and others to do these jobs well, we need and deserve high quality childcare that is affordable. And as a college educated childcare teacher, I deserve to earn much more than $19.27 an hour. Mm-hmm. HF 3681 will provide funding to reduce childcare costs significantly for so many Minnesotan families like mine. I urge you to support this bill and make it possible for families to afford their lives. Thank you.
And would folks please thank...
Good morning, Chair Pinto.
Folks, please thank Elena Skoglund for the testimony and both to her and to her and her husband for their work. And thanks to those of you. And if folks do need to leave, certainly feel free to. That's like we do understand that you're moving on to other things in your day, but so grateful for your work as providers of childcare and early learning. We appreciate it. So Jill Westendorp is up next, and then Leanne Rasashak. I hope I'm saying your last name correctly, if you can make your way up. But please proceed with your testimony and identify yourself. And cool. Thanks.
Chairs Pinto and Hassan and members of the committee. Hello, my name is Jill Westendorp, and I'm speaking as part of Take Action Minnesota's Parents and Caregivers United, organizing so Minnesotan families have what they need. Thank you for hearing me. I urge you to support the Great Start Affordability Program and fully fund childcare for every infant and young child in Minnesota. The high cost of childcare impacts virtually all Minnesota parents. Most families pay too much of their income to ensure their children have joyful, enriching care environments that support their development. This economic burden causes enormous stress, which negatively impacts parents' ability to be present, patient, and engaged with their children. The lack of affordable childcare also has an enormous economic impact on our state. Parents often have to choose between paying more than they can afford for childcare or quitting their jobs to care for their children. Both are bad for the economy due to reduced consumer spending and a smaller workforce. For my own family, quitting my job made the most sense. My husband was working from home full time while caring for our infant while I was at work. This was untenable, and so when my daughter Ramona was 8 months old, I left my career to become a 24/7 caregiver. My husband took on more work to make up for my lost income, often working up to 90 hours a week to provide for our family. We were both perpetually stressed and exhausted. It was not ideal for my husband, for me, or for our daughter. Access to affordable childcare would have made our life look completely different. I would have been able to continue my career. My husband would not have had to work so much, and we both would have been less stressed and more present with our daughter. Research shows that the first 4 years of life are the most critical time for social, emotional, and cognitive development. I urge you to honor the research and the stories of families like mine and fully fund the Great Start Affordability Program. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Thanks for sharing your experience and helping others as well. Leah Rastashak, you're making your way up. And then Suzanne Temple-Gum, I believe, is a public testifier, and if you can make your way up. And welcome, and please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Hassan, Chair Pinto, and members. My name is Leanne Rasajak. My pronouns are she, her. I am biological and bonus mom to four children, ages 3 through 11. I am also CEO of Women Venture. For the past 45 years, Women Venture's mission has been to empower women to achieve their economic goals by building profitable and sustainable businesses that transform our communities in Minnesota. Women Venture's expanding efforts to sustain the supply of childcare providers in Minnesota by giving clients the tools, skills, and capital to run these profitable and sustainable businesses. We are grateful for the 2023 state appropriation and have deployed nearly $250,000 in grants and loans to help childcare businesses in 9 counties thus far and counting since signing the agreement with DEED in November. Childcare is a uniquely important and challenging industry. Despite the importance of this industry, many challenges and obstacles to starting and sustaining childcare businesses remain, and the supply of childcare providers continues to decline. Minnesota has lost more than 250 licensed providers in the past year. While we're working on the supply side of the problem and are really happy to partner with the state in doing so, the reality is that these, in their current state, are often unsustainable or very low profit margin businesses. And so in addition to working on the supply side, we also need to work on the demand side by increasing public investment in the support of families as HF 3681 does. By increasing support for families, we are also increasing support for retaining childcare businesses in Minnesota, of which there are less than 8,000. The current population of children ages 0 to 4 in Minnesota, according to Wilder Research, is more than 330,000. The math doesn't math. Personally, as my partner and I plan for childcare this summer for our four children, the cost for quality, affordable summer care will exceed our monthly mortgage. I feel the strain and challenge of balancing childcare costs, student debt, and home ownership. And we are speaking from a privileged position as a dual high-income household. I'm advocating as a mother, employer, and leader who wants to see better options for all of our children in a diverse workforce of all income levels. The lack of quality, affordable childcare is keeping parents, primarily mothers, who want to work out of the workforce and deepening our state's workforce shortage.
We'll need to have you wrap up momentarily. Sorry.
As employers pressure employees back to the office, it is nearly impossible to be successful at home and at work without reliable, accessible child care. Today, I share this deeply personal story and experience with you because I support public investment in HF 3681. Thank you for your time, consideration, and service.
Thank you so much. Thanks for sharing your experience and also your leadership via Women Venture. We're grateful. And so our final two testifiers, I think, are members of the public who signed up. I'll ask you to be kind of even more tight, I'm afraid, on time. But the first is Suzanne Temple-Gum, and then our final testifier, if you can be up, make your way up as well. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Temple-Gum. I've been a high school teacher for 17 years. My spouse works at a Fortune 1000 company. We're parents to two, Ben, who's almost four, and Charlie, who's two. I'm also pregnant. Our family lives in a small house in West St. Paul. We spend sensibly and do our best to avoid new debt. Despite this, my spouse has to work a second job so we can pay the bills and save. With two in daycare, the cost of child care is currently about three times the cost of our mortgage. Come September, we'll have three children in daycare. On the heels of unpaid maternity leave, my spouse and I will be paying $45,384 a year on child care, nearly 30% of our net income. Our monthly daycare costs will be more than the cost of our groceries, car payments, utilities, student loans, and mortgage combined. The astronomical price tag isn't the only stumbling block. Finding infant care for the new baby has been substantially more time-consuming and frustrating than it was in 2019. We contacted 21 home daycares and 7 centers. 9 of the home daycares didn't respond. Others didn't have an open infant spot for 2 years. Of those centers that had openings, one was $485 a week, another $2,200 a month. One center with a potential opening in May of 2025 said we could be put on their waiting list for a non-refundable $422. The center where our sons went currently has 13 infants in line before ours. In desperation, we have actually considered asking my in-laws if they would move to Minnesota to help with child care. The monthly cost of a rental for them would be less than the cost of many centers. Mm-hmm. As things currently stand, with my spouse working an extra job, I often come home from teaching all day to solo parenting two toddlers while pregnant. It's hard, we're exhausted, and I do not believe that it should be this hard for a family to make ends meet when both parents are college educated and working more than full time. As a parent and fellow Minnesotan, I ask for solutions to the current childcare crisis in our state. If not for my family, then for others to come. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for sharing your experience to help others. And then our final testifier, if you make your way on up. And identify yourself and please proceed.
Good morning. My name is Margaret Sitta. You might not be surprised to see me here, Representative Pinto. I've talked to you about this out in the community.
Indeed you have.
I'm a high school counselor and parent, and I'm here to testify in support of House File 3681. I currently have two children in daycare, a preschooler and an infant. And this school year, my family is spending $896 per week for child care. As an educator, that is my entire paycheck. Child care is far and away our largest household expense. But because I carry benefits for our family and I get a break in the summer, we're very slightly ahead financially for me to continue working. I also like my job. My work is fulfilling, challenging, and interesting. And while it's difficult to be both a parent of young children and an employee, I would personally not prefer being a stay-at-home parent. My children are learning things I would not be able to teach them at home, and they love their teachers. I want every child to be able to access the kind of quality care that my children do. I'm deeply grateful for my kids' child care providers and the hard work they do, and I know they are not paid enough for the value they provide our family and our society. The economics of essential care work don't work for providers or families. For example, when my family was looking for infant care, no other child care providers in our area had a space available, even with 11 months of notice. Both cost and access have been an issue for us, and I know our now beloved center is doing their best not to increase costs for families while still providing quality care. We need the state to step in to support parents who are squeezed financially early in their careers and daycare providers who need to keep their doors open. I urge your support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any other member of the public who wishes to testify? Okay, there we go. So that's good. So we're going to move on to then to discussion on the bill. Representative Coulter, I think, had signed up or had raised his hand earlier. Representative Coulter, we'll start with you.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, I want to thank Representative Hewitt-Toon for her advocacy and passion on this issue. And I want to thank Chair Hassan as well for her comments, because I think it really is important not only to hear the stories from Minnesotans on that side of the table, but to hear the stories from Minnesotans on this side of the table, too. I also want to give a shout-out to Ifra, who offered a center in my district and sent me some lovely Valentines last week. Now, I'm wearing a button today that says, I'm at work today because I have childcare. And that is literally true for me every day. But it was acutely true for me this week, because 48 hours ago, almost exactly, I got a panic text from my wife because our childcare arrangements had fallen through for yesterday. And we were able to make other arrangements and it worked out. But we know that that's not true for a lot of folks out there. And I just wonder, you know, how many others in this room can say that? How many others outside of this room wish they could say that? You know, I was at the school where my daughter goes to preschool a couple of months ago. And if we think this is not something that Minnesotans talk about, I guarantee you they do. I heard two moms, and it was difficult to resist jumping in and telling them what I do for my day job, but two moms literally just talking about how challenging it is to find childcare, how expensive it is, and all of the hoops that they have to jump through just to make things work as parents of young kids. And the fact is that we all interact with the childcare system, whether or not we have young kids. And this crisis is holding all of us back. Childcare costs are holding us all back in so many different ways. We know, of course, the ways it's holding back businesses and workers, but it's holding us back on family and community stability, on our ability to do the things that make life worth living, be parents and friends and active and engaged members of our community. And so I'm really excited to see this move forward for that reason alone. But the other point that I want to make, and this is my last one, I promise, because I know we have a very full agenda. And those of you who closely follow the property tax division, as I know so many of us do, heard me make this point yesterday, that really this is a case of pay me now or pay me later. We can invest in quality, affordable, accessible early care and education now, or we can put more money later into public assistance programs, into housing, into health care, into the criminal justice and correction system, as Chair Pinto knows. Pay me later is always more expensive. It's always harder on our communities, and it always leads to worse outcomes. So I'm excited to see this move forward. Thank you.
Representative Colter, Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Katizabutun, for bringing this bill forward and initiating a conversation that's obviously of great importance to many folks here in Minnesota. I think this process works best when we're able to, from across the aisle, kind of illuminate each other's blind spots. I know you guys in the majority have definitely done that for me over the course of the past year, and I hope to return the favor perhaps a little bit here in these comments. So, you know, there are multiple blind spots that I detect in the proposal that's before us today, but I'll focus just on two for the sake of time. The first is long-term fiscal sustainability. You know, many of us were present at the U last Tuesday when we heard a symposium and panels hosted by the leadership of all of our caucuses on this issue of early child learning and child care. And it struck me as a fantastic sales presentation, offering all of the features and benefits of what this proposal could provide for the people of Minnesota. But there was one crucial piece missing that would be present in any actual sales presentation, and that's the price. What does it cost? What am I going to have to give up in order to obtain these features and benefits? And that's reflected in this bill, where, of course, we have the blank spaces where appropriations would go. And so the question becomes not just how much this is going to cost us now, but to what extent we're going to be able to maintain such a system moving forward. And, you know, those are questions that definitely need to be answered, because when we hear all of these stories that we can all relate to of having to contend with the affordability of a crucial service that our families depend on. By doing this, we are not removing those costs. We're simply transferring them. We're transferring them to the entire state, which is fine if the state can afford it, and if the state can afford it not just today, but tomorrow and 10 years from now and 100 years from now. And so I think what I would encourage the majority to do is to try to put some thought and actually put some numbers on what this looks like generationally going forward. Like, do we have the capacity not just to kickstart it today, but to ensure that we'll be able to keep promises that we're making to people moving forward? And one of the things I would point to is, you know, frequently, and maybe we'll hear it later when we get into presentations, we hear claims of future return on investment. We had great economic conversations last year about where money comes from and what we can expect in the future. So, you know, if those predictions are true, that we can expect some sort of return on investment in the future, we should be able to quantify at what point can we expect reductions in other areas of the state budget as a direct result of the investments that we're making today. And so I would definitely encourage the majority to look at that. And just one more quick point. Yeah. You know, I feel as though we might be evading accountability for the impact that public policy has had on the economy and the extent to which that is providing the downward pressure that folks are feeling manifest as difficulty with child care. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm thinking, Representative Katizabutun, that we've got a couple other folks, and then maybe we'll have until I suspect you'll probably want to make some comments in response to that, but maybe we'll move on to a couple other testifiers and then let you make comments at the end, if that's okay. And I suppose because Representative Hudson was kind of the one who framed that up, if that's okay with him, because he may want to have, okay, we'll do that. See, he's nodding. So Representative Lesnikar, we'll go to you next then.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill. I think we all agree a great start is critical. I sit on three committees, healthcare and workforce and children and family. And I certainly wouldn't have worked for 40 years without having child care in the last 30 years of my life. With that said, I think it's really critical that we have family child care, center freestanding child care, and school-based pre-care program, that this triangle is strong in all the communities of the state. And one of the things that concerns me is when we had our hearing in November, First Family Finance testified that 1,300 providers are concerned that they financially won't exist because they lose money on infants, they break even on toddlers, and they start to make money on preschoolers. So with that happening, we elevated one thing, which was great, a pre-K program, but we have two other major legs on that triangle that are possibly going to implode in Minnesota. So if that implodes with creating this great start of allowing benefits, we don't have providers because they can't financially make it. So I hope that we're looking at this model in a broad base of what we're doing to assure that the infants and the toddlers are going to have a provider base that's sustainable in the sense of what we do. The other piece I would say is that there's no doubt that mandates cost money. And if you look at what happened in the nursing home industry, we regulated it, and then we created an assisted living model. And we now have regulated that to match nursing homes, and we're in the same boat. The cost have went up, and models have closed, and then we're in the same boat. I would encourage us as child care providers to look at what are we doing with teacher licensing and how are we using people. We went against the four-year degree for the government jobs to allow to look at who is this person and what are their opportunities. And so to not look at those pieces too, I think is going to be detrimental to our whole big picture to create a plan that's going to work in rural Minnesota, greater Minnesota, and the suburbs in Minneapolis-St. Paul, because it matters to all of us. And when I look at the data in the district I represent, we've lost 50% of home care providers in Proctor, Two Harbors, Duluth, Hermantown. 50% is a huge hit. So healthcare workers, we built mecca hospitals, and we have, you know, you don't know if you come to work and you're there on your shift, but somebody doesn't come in because for whatever reason, you're going to be working a double shift. And mostly it's family child care centers that are able to accommodate that. No notice, because you don't know until it's 1:45 p.m. and somebody didn't show up for the 2 o'clock shift and you're now working 16 hours. So family child care is really critical
for these manufacturing jobs in our economy and healthcare. So to the point of making sure the triangle's strong, to the great start, I hope we can work together to look at those initiatives of how we do that. And I think there are opportunities for us to move forward. The 7% is, I understand what the ask is. I mean, I understand how expensive child care is. And so I do think there's ways we can move this needle. And the cliff for people, you know, to be $3 over is disappointing. That is something we should have been working on for decades, of looking at what is this gradual cliff for eligibility in lots of things. We have this all or none mentality, and there could be a better way to the state to support what we're trying to do. But my suggestion is that we need to look at the mandates as well as looking at money that people pay, because they are directly related. And if the provider doesn't exist, it doesn't matter how much of my income I'm going to pay, because the provider still has to make it with the mandates that exist today. So I appreciate what you're doing. I understand the ask and the intent, the points made on the fiscal note. I haven't seen that yet. But the reality is we've been told there's no money. And the majority party has said at the tax committee, we don't want any new taxes. So we need to figure out a plan of how is Minnesotans going to afford this? What bucket do we take from to make something like this work? And then what do we do to make it reasonable? Something that will work for greater Minnesota, rural Minnesota, suburbs, metro, and that's what's going to make one Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Just a time check for folks. I think we'll want to move on to the presentations at by like 9:30, so that's to just sort of keep an eye on time. But Representative Weiner, you're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess when it comes to family and issues like that, maybe I have a unique perspective on things. Most of the people in this committee probably realize or know that as a father of nine and one of my children here with me today, I have a big investment in family, and it's something that's near and dear to my heart. I love seeing when legislators bring their children onto the floor. I mean, this is great. That offers us some flexibility. But when I look at things like this, I question the why. Why are we in the position where we are? So Minnesota has the sixth highest cost for daycare in the nation. In a recent article, Minnesota Reformer, one of the major reasons that the cost of daycare is so high is regulations. So out in greater Minnesota, what we see is at-home daycare was huge. You know, if you had a working mother that wanted to pick up something on the side, they would do daycare in their home. The flexibility was there. What's happened with overregulation has driven those daycares out of existence. So it was brought up in many different articles. If you just scroll down why we're in the position we are, overregulation has killed us. It was mentioned that 50% down as far as number of daycares. So we have this shortage in greater Minnesota based on a situation that was created by legislation. Now, we want good, safe daycares, obviously. But when we're driving them out of business because of regulation that's been put into place, and then we have to come up with another solution, maybe we need to look back at that regulation and really analyze if that has been effective and if it needs to keep going on. The other thing is when it comes to cost and affordability. There was just something on the radio I listened to this morning, and I thought it was great. They said about 25, 30 years ago, roughly 20% of your income was eaten up by taxes. We're in a position now where 40 to 45% of your income is taken up by taxes. Now, we are a high tax state. So put that into perspective, medium income in Minnesota is $83,000. That 20% increase is about $16,000. Can we afford daycare if we lower our taxes in the state? If we look at how we're providing services, and I believe the governor had said we're a high tax but high service, here we are overregulating, overtaxing, and creating problems that do not allow our families to look at the options and say, we want to have more children. With a negative birth rate in our country, we absolutely need to have more families. I'm a big supporter of that. But if we're creating a situation through legislation and taxes that makes it cost prohibitive, regulation prohibitive. We really need to analyze what we have done here, a little bit of self, you know, introspection here. And if bad legislation has put us in this position, we need to look at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe Wiener. I may just represent Katizer too, and just the point about regulation. I think it's true, isn't it, that like throughout the country, red states, blue states, whatever the regulatory scheme, this is a huge crisis in every state, no matter how red it is, no matter what their system is. We could have 10 infants per caregiver. That would loosen regulations. Nobody would want to have their kid at that place, and it'd be extremely dangerous. But just any thoughts about that point? Because I think it is something that we often hear about the crisis, as opposed to just recognizing that the economics just don't work, just like they wouldn't in K-12 if we were expected that to be for-profit. But any thoughts on that?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've said often, in presentations and discussion in this committee over the last 5 years, that if you just have to look across the St. Croix to Wisconsin, we have similar population, we have similar demographics for the most part, wildly different regulatory climate when it comes to child care in particular. And Wisconsin and other states across the nation are seeing the same decline, particularly with family child care providers. I mean, I think that we have to consider the fact that if somebody's providing child care in their home, I think many parents do that while their children are young, and so that they have that flexibility that Representative Wiener talked about, so they're able to spend that time with their children and still make a little bit of income for their family while being able to be home. And then when their children go to school, they may or may not want to keep providing that. Then you have to look at somebody who provides that care for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. I have 4 children myself, and I can't thank the child care providers who have helped care and educate for my children enough, because it's exhausting enough being a parent. And spending the whatever your work schedule allows for you to be able to spend with your children. Most of us would really love to spend more, but it's exhausting when you're not getting paid for it, and it's exhausting when you're even getting paid for it. So as people reach retirement age, we really have to think, is that the reason that they might be leaving the market, because they have dedicated their entire career to serving the children and families of their community, and it's just time to move on and enjoy their retirement years? Or are they going to re-enter the workforce because their children are now in the public school system or a different school system that allows them to return to the career that they had left previously?
Thank you. Yeah, and so we do need to wrap up. I know, to be able to move on to the presentations. Lee Daniels, off on our committee, has a final thought or word that he wants to provide. Don't know if that's the case, Lee Daniels. Of course, the bill will be back up before us, but Lee Daniels.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. I couldn't say it probably better than my colleagues have said it. The one question I have is if we are going to make sure that nobody pays more than 7% for daycare, up to $188,000 for a family of 4, and the daycare centers are knowing that they're getting, basically daycare subsidized, wouldn't it be a huge, I'm not sure if it's a bad thing or a good thing, but the rates are going to go up exponentially. So I think Representative Wiener hit the nail on the head about looking at the long term. Are we going to be able to afford this? And I remember asking in committee last year, of all the spending that took place, when we get into the red, what programs are we willing to cut? So I agree fully with that. We don't want to go over our skis. And I just don't know if anything's been thought of, if the rates are going to be raised, which is not a bad thing, that people can, daycare providers can provide decent wages for their workers, but is there any limits? Is there a percentage we want to look at, or a cap per year we want to look at? Because if we can't control that, then the cost to the state is just going to skyrocket. And just like basically proceed with caution. Let's get some thought put into that. But it's a big problem. I've told my story many times where my wife had to quit her paraposition at the kindergarten and said to stay home and watch our kids. So we know what the struggles can be, but Yeah, it's going to be, it could be really, really expensive for the state.
Thank you, Lee Daniels. So sorry to do this to the author, but I'll ask you to keep it real short if you can as you summarize to, so we can move on. Representative Cattizo-Witun.
Mr. Chair, I really appreciate everyone's comments today, particularly our minority members. I think that there is a lot that we need to consider in moving forward, and so I appreciate the chair's bringing us together early on in the session so that we have time to do some of that conversation and due diligence. We'll continue working with our advocates and providers. I know, in particular, when it comes to regulation, most child care providers don't want to see us look at that that ratio count, simply because it would be really challenging and difficult and unsafe eventually to have too many children under one roof when it comes to either a center or family-based child care. And I think that looking at the future costs and the return on investment, where we can shift some of those levers in terms of what we are having to pay for already and what we can maybe make an impact on early in life and see those returns down the road. So I appreciate the consideration.
Well, thank you so much for such an exciting proposal. And we know that there's such a need all around the state as we have this. This is a public good, needs public support. So thank you so much, Representative Cattizo-Witun. Look forward to having the bill back before the Children and Families Committee, and so grateful to our colleagues in both committees for the conversation. So turning things over to Chair Hassan for the remainder of the hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we heard from the communities and parents and different parts of our communities who are, you know, telling us that there is a crisis and we need to do something about it. Now we turn our heads to the agency and we want to hear from what's happening in the agency and ways they're trying to work with us and tackle this issue. The first presentation presenter is Jenny Moses, Program Director of Minnesota Children's Cabinet. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony. Because we're crunched on time, we were thinking of like the presentations, both presentations will be 15 minutes and we'll have discussion from members for 15 minutes. So whenever you're ready.
Thank you, and apologies for the delay. Chair Hassan and Chair Pinto, my name is Jenny Moses, and I'm a program director with the Governor's Children's Cabinet. Thanks for this opportunity to be here and for the chance to share some of the interagency work in the child care and early education space. You might have to, there we go. We're going to get all the controls down. The Minnesota Children's Cabinet is a broad interagency partnership that utilizes a whole family approach to support the healthy development of children and families. The Children's Cabinet works to bring efficiency and effectiveness to state government efforts to improve child and youth outcomes. The work of the Children's Cabinet can also involve collaboration with counties and tribes, local communities, and other stakeholders. The Cabinet works to take data-driven and results-oriented approaches to coordinating, streamlining programs, aligning strategies, and promoting action and accountability of Minnesota's efforts to ensure that each and every Minnesota child, no matter race or zip code, is prepared to be a leader of tomorrow. The Children's Cabinet is co-chaired by the Governor and Lieutenant Governor. 21 commissioners participate in the Children's Cabinet to fulfill the mission of placing children at the center of government. A senior leadership team is also convened, consisting of cross-agency staff, of agency leadership from all participating agencies designated by their commissioners. The staffing and administrative support for the Children's Cabinet is provided by Minnesota Management and Budget, where my team sits. The staff also support a variety of cross-agency structures focused on child and family priorities, one of which is child care and early education. We can go to the next slide. Monthly, I get the privilege to bring together a cross-agency team focused on childcare and early education. In addition to the One Minnesota Plan goal of increasing access to childcare so business and community can thrive, the team is collaborating on coordinated policy and budget strategies, governance and workforce, and engagement, including external communications. We have resumed quarterly calls and a new Early Childhood Connector newsletter for the early care and education community, including family and licensed centers, as well as school-based programs to support that workforce. Over the last several years, the team has been implementing critical initiatives to stabilize, support, and expand childcare and early education programs for increased access. They continue to make significant progress on implementation, and given the recent historic investments, are really honing in on increased coordination, capacity, attention, and action. We thank you for your work in that space. Agencies, we can go to the next slide. Thank you, Tammy. Agencies, including those named here, MDE, DHS, DEED, MDH, DPS, OHE, and DLI, contribute their specific efforts and programs while we maximize impact through cross-agency coordination through the Children's Cabinet and related preschool development grant efforts. We convene and engage, use our data to improve and inform navigation and service delivery for families and those serving them. The Minnesota's Preschool Development Grant, Birth to Five Grant, or the PDG, is a partnership of the Minnesota Departments of Education, Health and Human Services, along with the Children's Cabinet, to align education and care systems across the state. The three-year grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services funded cross-agency and community efforts to support families with young children and those who support them, including the early care and education workforce. Through this grant, the PDG funded a position at the Children's Cabinet to better understand and support the business needs of childcare in Minnesota. Engagement and research led to a coordinated report with our partners at DHS and MDE and recommendations of the highlighting the importance of the early care and education workforce. Recognizing childcare as critical to our economic development and workforce, and DEED's unique perspectives, relationships, expertise, and data capabilities, the DEED Office of Childcare Community Partnerships was recommended after engagement with community, childcare businesses, business leaders, and interagency partners. I'll now turn it over to Director Tammy Wickstrom to share more about the DEED Office.
Thank you, Director Moses. Director Tammy Wickstrom, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning. Excuse me. Good morning, Chair and committee members. I'm Tammy Wickstrom. Let me get through my slides here. And I am the new Director of Child Community Partnerships at DEED. This slide is a little bit about me, but I have a long history in early childcare. I was a childcare teacher, a school readiness teacher, an early childhood family education teacher. I was the director of a tribal Head Start for 12 years, Head Start, early Head Start, and childcare. And then I have also ran a service agency at a tribal nation here in Minnesota. So I have a lot of experience in a broad range of early childhood programs and a broad range in types of service programs that are offered throughout the state and on tribal nations. I live in northern Minnesota. I have four adult children, many animals, and I am a brand new grandma. I'm super excited about it. My grandson's 2 weeks old, so I'm super excited to be a grandma today.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So this office is new. I have worked here for slightly over 2 months, about 2 months and 1 week, and it elevates DEED to focus on childcare as an economic and development workforce issue. I think we've all heard today how that if people can't go to work, they don't have childcare, they can't go to work. If you don't have workers, you can't run your business. It's all a connected cycle. So this office is to help elevate that issue, support small businesses, but also building quality and the quantity of childcare. We all know how critical childcare is in our communities, and it doesn't matter if that's a large community, metro or rural. I live in rural Minnesota. But the office is also hoping to create some stability and adaptability. One of the things that I've been doing as I've started this position is I've been meeting with some of our grantees or former grantees, some of the community agencies that we work with, including the MIPS. I met with Women Venture staff yesterday. Great job, and I heard some great stories about how they're supporting childcare. But we have to look at solutions that are unique to each community. And I had mentioned this before, what works in Tamarack, Minnesota is not going to work, be what works in St. Paul, Minnesota. Those are different types of things. So this office will be leading DEED's role in partnering to address this as that economic and development workforce issue. So I also have worked a lot with and touched base with many community agencies, including economic development directors, city planners, county planners. This is an issue across the state that many types of public agencies are looking at, or government agencies. So we want to work to help them find the best solution that will work for them. There are a lot of innovative practices happening in the state of Minnesota in childcare, and we just need to be able to ensure that there's a place where people can go to help find those or help make connections to help what they could do in their community. So when we think about childcare, we all have heard this today, but the lack of affordable childcare is that major barrier to work participation. There was recently a Women's Bureau study that looked at the cost of childcare and the rates of women's employment and what the cost of childcare did to that. DEED has some record funding to help support childcare availability, and those are the childcare economic development grants. That first RFP for the round of funding came out January 30th. The grants are due March 12th. We have had a lot of interest in that grant opportunity, and that grant is not for operating expenses. It's not for parent expenses. It's about building capacity. So how can they take the funding to create childcare slots? And that could be in center-based care, it could be in family-based family child care, or it could be in the special license type child care that was recently approved. So how can they use that money to increase the amount of slots that are in their community? And it can also be used for facility improvements, capital improvements, worker training, and to attract workers, anything that can be used to reduce the shortage in child care. So in this office, I also oversee some other funding opportunities that were appropriated through the legislature. One was to Women Ventures Partnership, and I've mentioned them, but they do a great job with some lending to businesses. I heard a great example of a childcare provider over by North Memorial yesterday getting a loan to help expand her business to multiple shifts. They also do some grants, and they do training for childcare providers, and DEED is here to partner with them in that work and support that work that they're doing. In addition, my office will be working with the Minnesota Initiative Foundation Grants, who are all doing great work regionally to focus on the regional needs of childcare. And they're all doing different things, similar things, but they're all doing different things that really meet the needs of their region. And they're helping facilitate that planning, engaging the private sector, working on developing plans to increase that shortage. I will just highlight Northland in Duluth is doing something called Jump Into Childcare, where they offer a one-day training program, and they give people CPR first aid and some basic training so that if they want to go become employed in a childcare, they have a heads up or, you know, a leg up on becoming employed in that business. So I think, again, that's just one of the innovative practices, and all of the MIFs are doing many innovative things across the state to look at how they can recruit childcare and how they can expand that business. So I will end there, and thank you for your time today, and ask if you have any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I want to note that this report is in your pocket. The packet that we have here, please take it with you and review it. It's very informative. Questions, member discussion and questions. No one has a question or a comment. Oh, I'm missing Jaeger.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say thank you for thinking comprehensively and thinking about how all these different agencies can work together. I think it's great that DEED, with their finger on the pulse in the business community, is able to contribute to these conversations and see how we can all work together to address this crisis. So thank you.
And who, I don't know who wants to take that question, but one of you can.
I'll just acknowledge your gratitude. We have worked really hard over the last several years to lead and convene at least 8 agencies in this space, and we're looking forward to future opportunities that arise out of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families to solidify that work. So thank you.
Thank you. You have a follow-up? Okay. Rep. Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Given all the work that the agencies have done in this area, I'm wondering if you can not necessarily give us a specific number, but kind of fill in the gaps a little bit in terms of what you anticipate the overall cost of a program like this may be, and what you anticipate in terms of costs going forward. Has any work been done by the agencies on answering that question?
Go ahead.
Representative Hudson, could I ask a question of clarification? The cost of which program?
Rep. Hudson?
The cost of the proposal that's before us today in the bill. Obviously, all the work that's being done is leading up to this proposal, and so as it's being considered by the legislature, having some idea of what the resource needs are, and again, I don't expect you to be able to necessarily put a specific number on that program, but clearly there's some sort of sense of what the need is and where the gaps are, and just if there's any sort of economic financial debt on that front.
Representative Moses.
Representative Hudson, thank you for that clarification. Child care access and affordability has always been a top priority of this administration. There, we've referenced some of the historic investments of the last session. We would look forward to working with the author further to understand the impacts of the bill that's before us.
Rep. Hudson, do you have a follow-up? Rep. Weiner, go ahead.
I'll make it quick because I understand that we're constrained for time, but thank you, Madam Chair. And the comment that was made, I would really like to point out that daycare in Tamarack is different than, you know, in the metro. Even in my area, the differences from the northern part of my area, when you're talking about a drive that's, you know, an hour and a half, we're looking at nearly 100 miles. Every one of those small communities has different issues. So I appreciate the flexibility and the one size fits all. Really can cause constraints. And when we talk about those differences, we have one area with a large Latino community, the next area, 8 miles up the road, where we have railroad towns, the old railroad towns, is entirely different. So that flexibility and the regulation that has to go with it, I appreciate the realizing that problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Weiner. I really want to bring your attention to This came from parents from everybody's district. It's not from the metro, it's from all over. And these are real stories, and it impacts real humans. So I would really encourage people to read this, because I was glancing at it while we were doing the presentations, and it's really impactful. And I don't see any other questions. Mr. Chair?
Thank you, Chair Hassan. I was just gonna note, Representative Hudson, I think there may have been a source of confusion, because even though these are being heard the same day, these presentations in the bill, the bill really was initiated, I think, by Representative Katiza Watoon and Senator Housechild in response to what they heard from constituents. So I don't know the administration is necessarily endorsing the bill at this point. You know what I mean? I think those are, so in terms of this, the work that these folks are talking about, I don't think it's fair to say that it's sort of intended to be leading up to the bill we were hearing. Those that happen to be here the same day but really are separate. I will say, it seems to me the integration point is simply that, you know, we have this sector that is, the economics just don't work, right? And I want to always remind ourselves, compare to K-12, right? So K-12, if we didn't have public support, right, if we didn't have public funding, we have a lot of public funding that goes to K-12, as we're all aware, and we disagree about how that funding should be spent, right? But I think we all agree that there should, in fact, be public support for K-12. Maybe it should be delivered in a different way, but I'm not really aware of for-profit K-12 that kind of works around the globe, really. So just a reminder that then with 0 to 4, it means that we've got this system where the economics just don't work, so we're trying to figure out from lots of different angles. We've got these incredible folks testifying to us that they're using all the resources of the administration to come together to try to address this broken system as best they can to say, if somebody is interested in actually providing this critical service, what can we do to support them in terms of resources, bring in a women venture and all sorts of things, the Minnesota Initiative Foundations. And so we're coming at it from a lot of angles, and then we've got the proposal from Representative Cadiz Watoon, Senator Housechild, saying, hey, one thing we can do is provide some support for families to be able to afford this. And so from a lot of different angles. And one thing I want to point out, in addition to Chair Hassan pointing out something in the packet, there's an article in one of the packets from a Star Tribune business columnist, Evan Ramstad, which actually quotes Representative Lesnikar, who kind of repeating the point she had made earlier. I just want to direct the folks' attention to this article talking about the need to invest just from a business perspective. And you all are doing that work in the presentation you've made. And so thank you so much for it. And thanks, Chair Hassan, for the time and sharing this today. So I'll turn things back to you, though, to close this out. Anything you want to say, Madam Chair?
Thank you, Chair Pinto. My lead classmate is here. I don't know if you want to add on anything to this conversation, but nope.
Just listen happily.
All right. Okay, well, thank you for this great conversation. I think if there was ever a need for making this point, we made the point that there is a real need across the aisle, and I think we might agree on semantics and how we do this, but we all understand that our families need help and we should step up. Well, thank you for this conversation, and with no further business in front of us, we are adjourned.